Hello and welcome to Series 5, Episode 6 of Out With Me, Susie Ruffle. Hello. I hope that you are well. I hope you're having a good week. Whenever you're listening to this, I'm just recording this on Friday morning before it goes out on the Monday. As ever, we received loads of lovely messages and emails after last week's episode with Jake Graff. It seemed that lots of people really enjoyed that. I loved that episode, so thank you if you got in touch. Please do remember to tweet about it or review it on the podcast apps. That's always massively appreciated. Sharing it on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. I mean, do people share things on TikTok? I've got no idea. I've just joined, but I'll be honest with you, I've got no idea what's going on. But if you've got in touch with me, I really appreciate it. Or if you just listened, I really appreciate it. You can always get in touch with me personally. The email is hello@outwithsusieruffle.com. I'm always delighted to hear from you. I've got a fantastic episode today. I'm really chuffed about today's guest, Self-Esteem, who I absolutely love. I just think she is so brilliant. If you haven't listened to Self-Esteem's album, the most recent one, Prioritize Pleasure, I think is just so good. And I was so chuffed that Rebecca Taylor, who was also known as Self-Esteem, agreed to come on the podcast. We had such a great chat. We met up in a little studio in London. We're doing some of the podcasts in person now, which is really exciting. So I get to meet the people that I'm interviewing, which is lovely. We had a chat in a basement studio in Soho, and I just loved talking to her. I think she's brilliant. I think she's so interesting and so talented, and I love her music. And I was just so thrilled that she gave me an hour of her time when she is so busy, so busy. So I really, really hope that you enjoy the conversation. I'm sure you will. And as ever, I've got some emails to share before we get on with today's episode. Okay, here we go. Hi, Susie. I'm glad you're back with Series 5 of the podcast. Your timing is just perfect because I'm stuck at home with COVID. It's the 12th day by now, and I've run out of activities to do at home, so listening to the new podcast is distracting me from eating all the junk food I have at home. I'm a nearly 33-year-old woman and I'm from Italy, so forgive me if something doesn't sound right in this email. I haven't written anything in English in a long time and my language skills are a bit rusty. Also, the Italian school system sucks when it comes to teaching foreign languages, so please be kind. Okay, before we even start, I'm so impressed that you can write and speak a different language. I can't do anything as clever as that, so be kind. I won't be kind. I'm impressed. I'm very impressed. Right, back to the email. I've meant to reach out sooner, but I've never found the time to do it. Now I've got plenty of time, so I guess I have no excuse. Listening to this podcast lately, it's triggered many feelings inside of me. I suspect that writing this email is going to require a lot of thinking that I'm not exactly looking forward to doing, but I guess I'm doing it anyway. I've been trying to remember when I realised I liked girls. I was probably 17, 18, and if I'm being completely honest, there might have been some clues before that. There was a girl in middle school that I was friends with. She was a classmate of mine, and I remember constantly talking about her, as well as getting upset whenever she didn't pay me enough attention. I was jealous of her in a way that I wasn't jealous of the other girls. I now know this was probably because she felt like more than a friend, but I did not have a chance to dive into those feelings because we ended up attending different high schools and I forgot about her. Besides, I was into boys, and back then I stupidly thought that one thing left out the other. At the time, I didn't know much about sexual orientation or gender identity. Diversity was not well represented in the media in my country. Pride was something that happened only in big cities far away from where I lived. And any issue concerning the LGBTQIA+ community was never discussed, neither in my family nor in school. Around the age of 17, it became pretty clear to me that I was attracted to girls. Acknowledging it was easier now that I was older. I had learned that when women liked women, she was a lesbian, so I must have been one of them. But being aware of something doesn't necessarily mean that you're accepting of it. Nevertheless, I felt I had to come out. It wasn't just about getting this huge brand new information off my chest. It was also sort of an ethical impost that pushed me to be honest with people I cared about, like I owed them the truth. I came out to a small group of friends. They were basically my entire universe. I considered them as my best friends, as they were all so important to me. But soon after, I wish I had never come out to them. They never said anything strictly or abusive or directly homophobic to me, but homophobia can be subtle and sneaky. Before coming out to them, I was afraid that our relationship would change as a consequence. In my case, nothing seemed to change, though it did feel somehow worse. None of them really addressed my sexuality. It was rarely mentioned. And when it was always awkwardly whispered. None of them ever used the L word. One of them told me that I was, quote, just looking up to girls who had things that I didn't have. That my feeling, according to her, wasn't attraction, but a combination of admiration and jealousy. Because most of the girls were prettier than me. Basically, I wasn't gay, I was ugly. She's a therapist now. I really hope that she does better than she did back then. Because even then, I struggled to find logic in her words. Although I did believe her. Twisted arguments like this one, along with their dismissive attitude, made me think I could not rely on my own feelings. After graduation, I left my hometown. And I thought that moving would help me to leave all my insecurities behind. But unsurprisingly, I carried them with me. Even though I met more accepting and more open-minded people, I wasn't exactly out. Only a few friends knew that I was gay. Most of my friends and family never questioned my sexuality, and I just played along with them. The urge of being honest I had in high school had faded out. I thought that it wasn't up to me coming out to anybody, that people should just stop presuming instead. In the meanwhile, I developed strong feelings for a guy who I was also good friends with. Things between us didn't go well, and I ended up feeling really miserable. I hadn't just lost my love interest, I'd lost one of my best friends too. Besides, I had to deal with this new situation now. Did being in love with a man suddenly erase what I had felt for women until then? The answer, of course, was, and still is, no. But somehow I used those feelings as an excuse not to come out. Letting people believe I was straight was convenient, and it was much easier than dealing with those unpleasant and uncomfortable situations when I tried to make people understand that it's possible to fall for guys sometimes, even if you're attracted mostly to women. I started to focus on the part of me who liked men, and I decided that coming out as a lesbian did not make any sense to me anymore. So I ended up never mentioning my sexuality to anyone, even those that knew about it. I went back in the closet where I still am. I still hold on to that straight part of me, as small as it might be. Looking back, it was tremendously easy to be stuck in this lie, and slowly, this deceiving reality is starting to feel dangerously uncomfortable. It seems that it's not working out anymore. I started to realise that going back in the closet caused me more damage than I thought it would, and the price that I'm paying to be more socially accepted is too high. I've missed out on so many opportunities that I wouldn't have missed out on if I was out. I keep falling for the wrong people because I was too afraid to admit what I really wanted. Not to mention that more often I felt like an imposter or a phony. I can't help but wondering, carrying on with this farce for such a long time has had a negative impact on other issues in my life that apparently do not concern my sexuality. Like, if I were out, would I be better at my job? Would I be a better friend or sister or daughter? Regardless of the answer, I know now that I want to have a fulfilling and happy life, and I have to allow myself to be who I really am, even when it's not convenient. I need to reconcile myself with the girl I used to be when I was 18, the one who craved to show the world who she was, even if she was a little bit scared. She's hiding in there somewhere, waiting to be found, and I have to give my life the shape it was always supposed to have. It won't be easy at this stage of my life, but I have to try at least. I suspect your podcast has played a big role in coming to terms with this. Your guest stories, along with the emails you share week by week, made me reconsider choices I've made up to this point and let me realise that I have to take a different path from now on. So I guess I owe you a huge thank you, Susie. You're doing an excellent job with this podcast, and I'm sure it means a lot to many people. One last thing. In episode 1 of this season, you mentioned becoming a mum. So congratulations to both you and your wife. I wish you all the best. You deserve it. I'm not going to share your name because I know that you're not out to everyone yet. And so maybe you don't want me to do that. But I loved this email. Firstly, your English is phenomenal. Not only is your English perfect, you also write in such a beautiful way. So that's incredible. But I'm sorry that you've had this this journey with your sexuality, and I think it will resonate with so many listeners. You know, sometimes if you have a bad response when you first start telling people, it can push you back in the closet for a while. I know that I had a similar thing when I told a friend long before I came out properly. And yeah, she sort of pulled this weird face and said something, and I sort of went, oh, probably not though, probably not. And it just, yeah, shoved me back in the closet for a while. And sometimes teenage girls can say such hurtful things. And I know exactly what you mean when you said, oh, I wonder if I'd be better, you know, at work, or be a better daughter or sister or friend if you were, you know, out. And I can only speak from my experiences. But I know that when I became really settled with who I was, and when I became really accepting of my own sexuality, it made me so much happier that everyone around me could see it, and it made my life so much easier. And I know it's different for different people, and I would never tell anybody what to do, but I certainly think having that resolution inside yourself with the comfortableness of who you are can only be a positive thing. But thank you so much for this email, and I am sending you so much love and good wishes to Italy. And I'm delighted that I've got a listener that's in Italy. Maybe I've got more. Who knows? Right, let's have one more before we get on with today's conversation. Hi, Susie. Long-time fan of the pod. I'm so grateful to have found it in the height of lockdown and the height of my sexuality crisis. As a young person, I found myself trapped living with my parents during a time where I felt like I could never leave. Back during the first lockdown, I identified, as I'm sure many other trans men once did, as a lesbian, and I found myself surrounded with a community. It was wonderful to begin with, and everyone was lovely, but something always felt off. I wasn't getting happier like I thought I would after finding my label. With the sudden exposure of such a bold and vibrant community, I quickly became aware of other people under the LGBTQ+ umbrella, specifically trans people. Of course, I've always been aware of trans folk, but having to stay home all day meant that I had so much more time to explore this community and who I was in relation to it. And it was finding Jake Graff, who was on the podcast last week's amazing documentary, that I thought, oh, this is a thing. I can't really explain it, but it sparked something in me. Anyways, skip a couple of months and everything made sense. I am now a confident, bisexual trans man, and I'm so grateful I have access to the representation I needed to discover my true self in a way that would have been much more painful if I didn't have the access to this representation. Like Jake said in last week's episode, you can only be yourself if you can see yourself, and I think he was bang on. I never see trans men represented in the media as much as any other minority, and giving them the opportunity to share such an important message and stories is what we need right now more than ever. Thanks so much for having Jake on the pod. It meant the world to me. And thanks for reading this far. If anything, the opportunity to write it has been a much needed cathartic experience above all else. With warmest regards, Robin. If you read this out, name sharing is okay. Well, Robin, thank you so much for getting in touch. I'm so pleased that you enjoyed Jake's episode last week. I think he said so many interesting and important things. And if you're someone that hasn't listened to that episode yet, I highly recommend it. It's such a great conversation, I thought. Does that sound braggy if I'm part of the conversation? I don't know. But I thought it was a really great one. And I'm so pleased that it meant so much to you, Robin. And I'm so pleased that you're seeing that representation on this podcast. It's so important that everyone sees themselves, hopefully, across the series. You know, obviously not every single series has got the same amount of people from different parts of our community, but I hope over the course of the 5 series you might have seen yourself once or twice in those stories. But I also think we can see ourselves in each other's communities as well, so hopefully other episodes have resonated with you as well. But thank you so much for getting in touch. Okay, let's get on with today's conversation. The fantastic Rebecca Taylor, who was also known as Self-Esteem. I mean, if nothing else, you can just hear me fangirling for the next sort of 45 minutes. I really hope that you enjoy it. If you want to get in touch, please do. The email is hello@susieruffle.com. We seem to be getting lots more listeners, but receiving a lot less emails at the moment. So if you want to get in touch, I'm here. I'm ready. I'm waiting. Okay, let's go to that conversation now. Hello, listener. I am so excited for today's conversation because I am a massive fan. Rebecca Lucy Taylor. I mean, I don't know whether you use the Lucy, but it's definitely in there on Wikipedia. So that's what I'm going with. Rebecca Lucy Taylor is better known as Self Esteem, whose 2021 album Prioritize Pleasure is currently my most listened to album on Spotify. She's been nominated for a Q Award, NME Award, 2 Brit Awards, 1 Artist of the Year for BBC Music Introducing, and the Music Award at the Attitude Awards. I was at the Attitude Awards and her performance was bloody brilliant. Prioritize Pleasure has received rave reviews. The Guardian, the Sunday Times, and Gigsy ranked it one of the best albums of 2021, and The Guardian named I Do This All The Time as the best song of 2021. I am so flattered she's made time to join me today. Welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Oh, I love that. I've got goosebumps.
Oh, well, it's about you.
I know. That's
oh, my God. I'm brilliant.
No, but it is, because because it's so quick to, like, I'm like, why not me, about other people I see? And it's good to remember that. And doing the double at The Guardian, that was cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, I feel like lots and lots of listeners to the pod will be very, very aware of you. But you've been, like, in the music industry for a long time.
Uh-huh. It's like 15 years or something now, I think.
And how long have you been in it under Self-Esteem?
Four, I think.
Is that all?
4 years. Maybe it's now five.
Because that's happened pretty quick.
18, 19, 20, 21.
She's using her fingers. Yeah. If anyone's trying to
pitch. As you can see, this is how good I was on the House of Games. One, two. Yeah, four. No, coming up five. Yeah.
That, and two of those years in a pandemic.
Yeah. That's a good point. I should come here more often. This is making me feel way better.
It's basically like 2.5 years you've been Self-Esteem.
Yeah, it's weird. Even my whole life, there's like I renounce everything pre-it personally as well. So it's just, it feels longer because it's the only bit of my life I'm able to remember without the trauma blockage.
Right. Okay.
I'm joking, but also,
no, I know.
I'm not.
But also, it's a hard industry.
Yes. And it was harder when I was doing something I wasn't as sort of in charge of and as passionate about. And yeah, I'm having the best time. And it's so good it's worked a bit this time. Like, I feel like my whole life I've been like, hello, I'm talented. Look, give me an opportunity. I'm a really sturdy horse that can do loads of jobs. And now they're
you're
finally...
You're a good guy, you're a good sturdy
girl.
Yeah, I am.
Big clomping horse that can do this really well. And finally getting the opportunity to is great. But, you know, my wash basket is overflowing and it's really stressing me out.
Okay. Well... Look, do you want to pop around to the laundry? I don't know. I don't really know what you're asking
of
me
that
here.
For you.
But I mean, I'm not sure I'll help. I mean, Self-Esteem was really stressed, and I wanted to. I was pleased that you came on my podcast, and now I'm here. I don't know what's going on.
That's
kind. So you grew up in Rotherham.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I read that your dad is in steelworks.
Yes.
And your mum's a secretary. It's really weird what you find about. So whenever people do the podcast, I'm always massively flattered that they make the time to come on. And I think it's really important that you like read articles about them and that you do a bit of research. Mm-hmm. And it's always quite interesting the things that pop mm-hmm. up on mm-hmm. Wikipedia. I'm like,
yeah.
Mum does this.
They've really decided to run with that. That was one newspaper that won't be named really loves to hammer home the fact that I'm not from a super rich background.
Right, okay.
And that's their arc every time they write about me. But yeah, my dad, he was in the health and safety department. He's retired now. Mm-hmm. He was a prog keyboard player though when he met my
mom.
So yeah, he's really amazing at like horrible prog music.
But listen, if that's what people are into.
Well, he's into it. None of the rest of us are. And he goes up into the loft where he's got like quite a few synths and stuff and puts his headphones on and just goes and goes. It's amazing. He's like, people ask like, where have I got it from? And I'm like, not my dad, because he doesn't need to be seen. It's just
right.
For him kind of thing. Whereas I have had to make a big song and dance about it all the time.
Listen, yeah. You're preaching to the choir.
Why do we do this?
For me, probably because I didn't have enough friends at school.
Oh, yeah. Same, actually. Yeah.
And I'm desperately sort of going, if you all laugh at me, it kind of means that I'm
fine. Lonely whilst the laughter's ringing.
Exactly. How can I feel sad if I've written a joke and you've all laughed? So was it quite a musical household then?
Yeah, even though everyone's very shy. But my dad was this keyboard... crazy keyboard man and get to play the guitar. And my mum played the violin, but... she would sort of be very coy about it, but she was quite good. And there was a lot of music, like Carpenters, Beach Boys, Beatles, like all that sort of thing. Like fun for me was to put a record on and like dance around to it, you know. In the ye olden times before phones.
Before you could ask Alexa to do something.
I know, yeah.
So did it feel like when you were growing up that like music was an option for a job?
Good question. Yeah, everything was really possible. But also it wasn't like music was... I would do anything. Mm-hmm. I played cricket really well. Could have been a cricketer.
Right.
I played tennis. I did painting. I did amdram. I did dancing. I just wanted to be involved in anything, whether or not it was like fun or not. That came later. Just being there was the like MO for me.
Was that because you were like...
So I'm kind of similar. I did lots of different things and sporty and then Amdrammy stuff. And it was because I was like consistently trying to like find my people.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, I'll play five-a-side.
Yeah.
Sure.
I see now that that must have been what it
right.
was. But the thing that stuck was music, I suppose. And I always like, I was like writing songs when I was really like 10 or something and would get the girls from around the corner to come around and sing them and do dance routines. And I like, I was bullying women into singing and dancing with me, which is what I do now for a living. But I pay them, so that's fine. But yeah, job-wise, yeah. My parents were really, they never made out I couldn't do anything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which was amazing. But they also weren't pushy. So I used to be like, if I saw like Sylvia Young on the TV or anything, I'd be like, God damn, why don't I live in London? Or like I used to really curse that we didn't live in London because I would have had access to all these things, which is funny now because obviously going to Sylvia Young doesn't necessarily mean you have a career or whatever.
No.
And it is cool that I'm here now in the way that I am. But yeah, they never made out it wouldn't be possible. And my school didn't either, really. But, you know, if anything, my advice is it isn't really possible and it does take ages and it's really hard work. And how much you work versus what you make, is the discrepancy is so shit. But I'm glad I'm here and I'm glad I'm doing it.
What were you like at school?
Just, I think because friends was such a big thing, Phoebe was like a gateway
oh, really?
To understand me. Now, I don't particularly identify with Phoebe or feel like I am, but I was a weird blonde girl with a guitar who
right.
I guess was quote-unquote okay. And people could understand me in that manner. So I was quite like popular, but also weird. And
would you have been like playing in like school shows and things
yes.
like that, performing?
Yeah, but that I was lucky because my school, it wasn't lame to be in shows. It was actually quite cool.
Oh,
like, it was
cool.
A thing to do. And I was very emotional, obviously, and that was the worst bit. But everything else was pretty good, really. I had a good time and it was really busy and I did a lot of things and had a lot of chances to do things because the school, the music teacher specifically and the drama teacher were just like good people that like cultivated that in
you still
kids.
In touch with either of them?
Yeah, my music teacher, I am.
That's really
like
nice.
He's really why I'm still going, you know. In many ways
he must
he's
be
amazing.
So proud of you.
Yeah, it's so nice because when you think about it now I'll do the bare minimum. I'll like clock out ASAP, but they used to stay and stick around and make sure we did all these cool things, and they, you know, they weren't getting paid for that. It was amazing, really.
I mean, you say you're clocking out ASAP, but I feel like you've put in the years.
Yeah,
it's not
today.
You're
I'm
right.
here all day.
So how young were you when you got into the music industry? Because to me it feels like kind of the beginning parts of it, certainly in the sort of folk area that you were in. I don't know why I'm assuming male, but I assume everything's very male.
Uh-huh,
and like quite, like, just hard.
Yeah.
Just like, just constantly knocking on doors.
Yeah. Well, I was like 18. I went to get to drama school, obviously. Auditioned, didn't get in. So I took a year out to train.
Sure.
And in that year, I just started Slow Club, essentially. Mm-hmm. And we started touring and I always thought we were getting these opportunities because we were a cool band, but because it was just two of us, and I played the drums, stood up at the front of the stage, we were really easy to like clear on and off. So we got back-to-back support tours, had a manager, got an agent, then got a label, and it was all like I see now, not to be too negative, but like it was marketed to me as like, we got you a tour of the Barflies. And
right.
I was like, oh my God, my life's going to change. And of course it didn't and doesn't. And
what's it, because I've done a lot of support as a stand-up, and it can be the shows can be really great and really fun, but also there is sort of sometimes a feeling of like, you are the thing that is in between us and you know, Michael McIntyre.
Yeah.
You're the thing that is stopping us from watching Michael McIntyre.
Yeah, yeah.
So it can be a bit of a slog. What's it like as a musician?
Well, now I hate doing it, but back then I was like just so excited by it all. And
yeah,
everything I thought was cool was what I was being. Like I would go to like Tilly and the Wall shows and Bright Eyes and things like that, and I was obsessed with all that. And then I was it. To other people, I was the cool band. And that got a lot of they got a lot of work and devotion from me just because of how much I wanted to feel cool. Do you know what I mean? Like if I had any ounce of self-respect or context, I probably wouldn't have stuck around so long. But I'm glad I did. Like it made me really, I'm really good at winning a crowd over.
And your live shows, like you fucking sell it. It's like, it's not you know, I've seen lots of musicians and, you know, and it's great people, you know, some people just stand and sing, but it's like a full show.
Yeah.
Lights, like the whole deal. Like, and it's on your Instagram or on, I think I follow one of your musicians' Instagrams as well. People like put up, like people love that it's a show.
Yeah. Yeah.
So has that come from that?
Completely. Yeah. You know, you do over 10 years in a band where you're encouraged to not look like you like it or like not
like you're too cool for it.
Yeah, it was all very that, and that was that's fine, and that I'm not looking down on people who prefer that sort of approach, but I was just like, all this has been in time the whole time, like, oh, just lights. I say this a lot, but like when I was a kid, like conservatory, you know, like a patio,
yeah,
that was a stage to my brain. If you had like a proscenium of any kind or a playground or a line on the ground, I was like, that's the stage. And to spend so long not being able to use the stage to its full potential has killed me.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's arguments for both, and I'm not being...
I think it's what you feel. If you feel like you should be doing the other,
yeah,
then it must be quite hard.
It's very bad for your mental health if you're trying to sort of do something to the best of your ability that doesn't really represent you, and you're not really getting paid much. That's the difference. Because I used to be like, you're an actress, this is fine, do it, just turn up to work. But you know, when I've had real jobs now, and you get treated a bit, you looked after, you know, and I kind of wasn't, so it was just rough, but also had no idea in the moment. And now,
so
I
were
can
you
see,
just
you know.
Were you doing support for lots of different people, just going all over the country? Yeah.
But it really was at the start, like, cool.
Of course,
it.
Yeah,
I was like,
yes. Totally.
And we would drive it, you know, poor Charles had to drive us in the Peugeot 206, you know, and I got a pylon idol sinus from being stuck in the back
of my God.
Do you know what one of those are? Only truck drivers get them.
Really?
Yeah, but I got two from driving in the 206.
Oh, my
which
God.
Is, I haven't taught, you know, I've never come out about that, but here we are
there
on
you
your
go.
Podcast. It's
Thank
exclusive.
You.
it's like the most...
Just because you were sitting so uncomfortably.
Well, I used to have to sit in the back of the car with my legs up over the
kick drum.
Yeah, so all the pressure was just on, like, my coccyx, which is why truck drivers, from sitting down for so long, get these weird things. It's like having a... Yeah.
Self-esteem / truck driver.
Yeah.
I mean...
But when it... See, this is kind of why self-esteem is like it is, right? I was 23, I think, when that happened, and I was mortified, deeply shameful, couldn't believe it, and now I'm like... It's really funny.
Yeah.
Like, it's really funny, and that I celebrate everything disgusting or real about myself, and that makes me so happy that I'm no longer that, like, adult girl that's desperate to look cool or hot or...
But that's,
you know,
I think, why so many people have connected with your music, because it is so unashamedly you and real, and not, like, it's really warts and all. Like, you know, that's fucking great. Like, that's, as a stand-up, I feel like that's what comics do when they're really being their best, in that they're, like, really getting to the truth of something.
I feel so set much safer doing that, and, like, protected by just being open. Because my 20s were, like, trying to hide, trying to be perfect, trying to be that, you know, the manic drip pixie French
dream girl,
bitch
thing
was like my life. Everyone I went out with dumped me for French women. Not that I'm anti-French people. That's another exclusive. Cancelled. But yeah, I and now celebrating that I am absolutely not that.
Yeah,
is I've made it my job, and therefore it's. It's just soothing all the time. I'm soothed by being allowed to just be exactly me.
And do you find that, there must be young women that are so into you? You know, I feel like I feel like, you know, I've said to you as soon as you sat down, like, we've met briefly years ago, and I was like, I really have to tell you that I really love the album.
That.
Like, I'm listening to it all the time. Like, I'm actually like, I'm really thrilled that you did the show. But you know, I think, you know, I'm 36 now. So when I love a musician, I'm like, oh, I love that person. I've bought tickets to their show. Brilliant. Yeah. But I think if I was like 16, I'd be like, I need to go to 7 shows. And I need her to notice me. I need her to see me in the crowd so that she knows that I'm there. Like, that would have been...
Yeah.
And are you getting that?
Not so... Well, no, because my fan base is not that young. Like,
right,
it's fun
okay.
when there are, like, young women, because I'm like, that's cool, because I'd have loved to have heard someone saying what I'm saying.
Yeah,
about
absolutely.
Them. There's a lot. My favourite is like women in their 30s who haven't had kids or got married are yeah. like my congregation.
Yeah, right.
and I see, you know, it does. I say this a lot as well. Like, it's all for me. Like, I made it all for myself and all to give myself freedom from everything that fucking does my nut in mm-hmm. about my whole existence so far. And then the bonus is that it really moves or connects with people mm-hmm. and I'm so glad and I feel less alone for it. And when I just, when people say it's radical, I'm like, oh, it's really sad that I'm radical by just like not being, I don't know, glossy and, or just saying what I'm saying, which isn't that amazing, really. I don't think it's just my lived experience to music.
Well, I think it's experiences that people have had or have had similar things. Obviously, you know, like wouldn't be directly related to like the music industry potentially, but like, you know, in their own fields. But I think like someone standing on a stage and owning it and, you know, performing it in such a way, hopefully the things you aren't saying are radical, because that does sort of really leave us quite hopeless for women. But I think people feel aligned to that. I think seeing someone like you on stage is... Like, I remember the first time I saw sort of queer comedians being like, oh my God, that woman,
yeah,
she's like me. And it's really validating.
Yeah, it is. And that's what art should be, I suppose.
Yeah, totally.
Or could
so
be.
Who were you inspired by when you were like first getting into music?
I'd love to know truly who it was, because like on the surface it was all these like Americana bands, all those like Tilly and the Wall. They were just like three women dressed like maniacs. One of them was tap dancing and I was like, oh, brilliant, you know. So stuff like that. But then when I was a kid, I was obsessed with Alanis Morissette. Like,
same.
Every single sure. thing sure. ever. Yeah. I could sing every word. Even though it's weird that I felt such an affinity and then like lived out what Jagged Little Pill's about in my 20s right, without yeah. realising. I was like, oh, damn it, it was there all along. And I love, but then I really loved like Fugees and Lauryn Hill and mm-hmm. and rap, loads of like rap, even though it was like year seven. And so, yeah, just, I've always just obsessed over music and it sort of gets me like, certain things will make me elevated and like high and excited. Mm. And my imagination is so, well, was like so broad and wide and wild, like soundtracking it was... how I hung out, like it sounds really sad, but I didn't knock about with many people. I spent a lot of time alone as a kid, and yeah.
When you say soundtracking it, do you mean like soundtracking your life?
Well, I'd have like a story in my mind.
Yeah, okay.
See, this is what my dad and my brother played cricket, and so all my weekends would be at the cricket ground, like all day. Cricket's well, a long game.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, they even stop for tea, don't
yeah.
they?
And it was this in Anston, where I'm from, cricket ground, and then just behind it is this big woods called Anston Stones, and it's like just a scummy wood, really. But
right, okay.
as a kid, I was like, I would just put my Walkman on and go around there, and I'd have all these wild stories and making things up and characters. And I was obsessed with the Queen's Nose. Can you remember that?
Yeah, well, they rubbed it, and then something happened.
Yeah. So I felt like her was Harmony. Yeah. Yeah, I just imagined this like cool life where I was this like cool person, scamp. I always had a little dog with me called Scruffy. I think there have been a lot of
no, but I think that that's really, it's interesting, because I've interviewed a lot of creative people on the podcast, and I think it's interesting, like loads of us as kids or as sort of young adults sort of lived in a slightly disjointed world that was somewhere else, because it was like, I'm going to go here for a bit. It's safe here.
Yeah. But what I imagined was this. I was always like, there was these girls I was friends with called Madeline and Amy. And I made them, there was a perimeter of the playground drawn on like a line.
Mm-hmm.
One of the games was they were inside it and they were the princesses. And me and this dog Scruffy were on the outside. And we were like homeless, asking for food and money. That was the game. I made them play. So go figure.
Okay. Sure.
Listening to Jagged Little Pill. Making so much sense.
Yeah. Did you ever do that thing where you would sit in a car and look out the window and pretend you're in the music video?
Yeah,
and be like,
yeah.
Oh, that's my life.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the easier way to that's describe what I just said.
No, not at all. Not at all. I'm really pleased that I got a little insight on Scruffy.
Uh-huh.
I'm just pleased that I knew.
Well, I've always, you know, if I ever am successful enough to have a dog, because it does need, you need to be so successful that you can pay someone to sort that shit out.
To look after your dog, yeah.
I do think about calling it Scruffy, and that'll be some...
Well, listen, when I come to the show at Brighton Dome next year, I'm going to have a sign. Okay. Saying this is for Scruffy.
I hope so. I haven't even told that one. But it's funny when I think about my like sexuality and stuff like that, I'm like, oh, there were signs. I demanded that I was a boy who was on the outside of a sure. castle and like in love with the two princesses. That when, makes sense.
Because I've read about you, it sort of states online that you came out publicly in 2003.
Oh, I love that. That one is yeah. so funny.
Came out bisexual.
Openly. I'm openly bisexual. Yeah.
Yeah. Were you, because I read an article from a couple of years ago, maybe, or maybe it was when Prioritized Pleasure came out, and you said that you, when you came out, I'm trying to try and get the wording right, it was something like you were sick of like pretending to be the straight girl behind a microphone or something like that. When you were talking before about being in that sort of folky place where you were going around the country, was it sort of very regimented? Like, I know you said you weren't having fun, but was it very regimented, like sort of how you dressed or how you appeared?
Everything. I mean, that's another reason why I like I am today. Like, if I was hotter and sent you know, sexy and straight, it felt like that would help, you know, us break. No one made that put that on me particularly, but yeah, just to be. And I always struggled. I never knew how to feel or what to do. And I, you know, I used to be excited to sing the songs that other people wrote that were about women. So I got to say,
right. I was like a little. Were you aware of your sexuality before you came out publicly?
Not, well, the press launch.
Yeah,
it's never been like a massive deal. I mainly dated men, and then I had a really awful, you know. Classic 2012 nasty bastard, like, ruined my life relationship, and then and started therapy and started like having any self-awareness at all, and then it was there I was like, oh, I did used to love it when my friend would fall asleep on my shoulder after netball, and
yeah,
and then started, you know, dating more openly and like not bothering what gender it was, and never looked back.
And has that been something that, because it feels like, maybe I'm wrong here, but I feel like there's a real queer audience for self-esteem as well.
I think like it makes sense, but also even if you're not, I mean, we debate what queer means.
Yeah, sure.
But like, I think just for me as well, they're not really linked, but my life was so up until coming out and being, you know, having a partner that wasn't a man was really like helpful for me to understand everything about who I am now, and so much of it before, and you know, from childhood to then, was about the shape-shifting and the pleasing of men and survival, and I bought into it. I used to, you know, a night out was only about getting off with someone, all those sort of things. Like, tours was like, if I had a boyfriend, people treated me better, or I
did
was
you
safer.
Really feel that?
It felt like that all the time in my 20s, yeah. But then also in a manipulate, I could be really good at getting what things we might need, or I'd flirt to get us into things or whatever, and like, gross, you know.
But I mean, but understandable, because I think it's what society tells us is where our worth is.
Yeah, and so like, regardless of what gender I'm with, I've now got such a massive amount of, I just don't fucking do that. Like, and my music is about not compromising or changing, and knowing that you don't owe anybody a single thing, whether you're queer or not. I think like women need to hear that sometimes, but like
100%. And I think that is the thing. I think it's about being seen, like we were talking about earlier, like being seen or being heard. And I think, like, you know, those, you know, I've often had like similar feelings where I've been like I know when TV producers have been like less so now, because I think the world's shifted, but certainly like 5 or 6 years ago, people being like, we just don't know where to put her. And I was like, I know that you're saying she's a lesbian, we don't know what to do with her because she's not gonna look pretty on a panel show. And I remember doing panel shows, and I remember an executive producer saying to me, do you have to wear a suit? And I was like, well, I have to be me.
Yeah,
you know, that's what I wear.
And that's very recently was like that.
Oh,
you know,
I mean, that's within like 5 years.
Yeah But even that, sometimes I look really femme, and I did Buzzcocks and I walked out, no one knows who I am. I was like a backup, I wasn't like booked, so you know, I was very aware that I sat down and no one laughed at anything I said until quite a lot later, and then I was like, oh, just to the untrained eye, I'm just like a blonde woman, and that doesn't really make me likeable. Do you know?
Yeah, okay.
I really forgot, because I'm really charmed in my life that I perform to people who, if you're there, it's because you like me. Or,
yeah.
Yeah, that was crazy. I mean, that's different to what you were saying. But
no,
just like,
no, no, but it does make sense.
Being a woman at all is, they'll find some way to, unless you are exactly a certain amount of things that make sense for certain audiences.
Yeah.
It's tough and weird.
And do you find that now, like, so you finished with Slow Club, did that, you sort of like just dissolved that, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I got a theatre commission and I was a bit like, brilliant.
Oh, cool.
Right? Like, that felt like a way out and like, yeah, a legitimate way to... And
like before, writing music for...
Yeah, and I, yeah, was like going to write it as well and be in,
cool,
it and all this kind of stuff. And I was a bit like, I'm going to focus on this. And it was really hard. I did a real, yeah, coward's exit. I was like, I'm going to do this, and we never did it again. But when the other people were very happy doing what they were doing, and I was so unbelievably unhappy that it just had to be done.
And unfortunately, like, I think often, again, as women, we'll often sort of put ourselves out for as long as possible, whereas you sort of go, I feel like my male counterparts would have walked away from this 3 years ago.
Exactly. So. And the tools I have now, I would, I think, communicate clearly.
Yep.
And, you know, get out, and because I wasn't happy. Mm-hmm. And creatively,
yep,
unbelievably stifled. Like,
yeah,
it was just unbearable. And my mental health was through the toilet every day, because what I now see, I can have a stupid idea for a t-shirt and we make it and I'm like, oh, that gives me joy.
Yeah.
Like, it was as simple as that. And like, do you have to do it? Like, what is being an artist or whatever? And I really think I have to, right? And
yeah,
like, to have put boundaries on that for so long made my emotional well-being take a while to figure out.
Yeah, and I think that like makes total sense. And I think, like, you know, if you love it, you gotta do it, you gotta do the thing. And like, you know, and I think that is anything from, like, you know, us doing it, like, we're really lucky that it's our jobs, but also, like, you know, people doing stuff for pleasure or making movies or just being in a band or doing art or just going to a pottery class once a week, whatever that thing is, like, it's so important that you scratch that creative itch, because I think, you know, otherwise, like, that's where bitterness sets in.
God, yeah.
And that'll kill you. It'll kill you.
They made a documentary about us, and it's really beautiful and really sad. And I think it's cool that it's not just a tour doc. But you can see I am like losing my mind, because I want to do all these things, and everyone else is pretty happy with what they're doing.
And they just keep putting, and you just kept getting put on the box, wheeled out on stage, and
pretty much. But like, no one's fault, you know. And I really never clearly said what was wrong with me. We never had any conversations. Like, now I understand. Saying exactly what I mean is like, that's my drug. I'm like, oh, I'm like I just can't get higher than like saying what I mean. Because I've just never done it. I've never done it. That's why songs are exciting, because I can do it without. Yeah, I can say what I mean, and it's vague enough that you don't know if it's about you.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted.
And it's
been,
I was just going to agree that it's being understood, isn't it? Being understood is such a powerful thing of like, oh, you get me. It's like, you know, those sort of, when you like have a new friend, for example. I think like sometimes like making a new friend as an adult is quite like stressful, because it feels like you're 10 and you're going, would you like to be my friend? But like, you know, when you really connect with someone and you're like, oh, that thing happened. That happened to me too.
The best, right?
Oh my God, it's the best thing ever. When
that's,
you're like, oh,
is.
You felt like that.
Yeah.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
I feel like that too.
Isn't that funny?
And that's like, I mean, that's, like, you know, that's what I try and do with comedy. And like, I know that you definitely do it with your music. Is it like, you know, I feel like when an audience laugh, it's kind of a way of them going, me too.
Yeah.
I've noticed that thing. I've felt that thing. I've
Which
experienced
has been
that
human,
thing.
Right?
Exactly.
If you feel complete, I've just felt so alone for so long. And then I had this platform and I wasn't saying really what I needed to. And so I felt even more lonely and unheard. Because it was like, I'm standing there. Why aren't I saying what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm standing there and sort of performing a version of me that everyone else wanted, you know.
And so how long after sort of, you said you went into the theatre job, how long after Slow Club did you go, okay, now self-esteem is the thing? Like, how long before you were writing music and performing under that name?
I'd done a few songs, and I vividly remember playing one of the songs to who was managing Slow Club and them just not really saying anything. And that, you know, that's, and then years later I was like, maybe that song wasn't shit. let me just revisit it. It wasn't. It's just like so classic, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I the name Self-Esteem happened. I got an Instagram account, which sounds so lame, but that I started posting just art I was making and things I was doing. I was painting. I moved to Margate to like make my outgoings as low as possible in terms of rent and stuff. And I had a year of odd jobs I was doing. But started to think about it. Got a new manager and it took ages. The planning was... So a good, I guess, a year or something before I did anything. But working really hard. I used to like work like 9 to 5 on it. Like, loved it. That's how I finally I had a use for all this energy and adrenaline that I'm just like constantly.
How do you go about writing? I know that's it's such a like a dullard thing to ask someone that doesn't understand music. But is it like, will a line come to you? Will a melody come into your head? Like,
it's always a bit different with me. Sometimes there is complete and utter full, like the chorus of I Do This All The Time has been in my head for about 7 years.
Really?
Like, yeah. Exactly how it appears has been up here. So that's one way of it happens. I do a lot of just writing on my phone and those one-liners are always like jumping off points.
Yeah, and if you don't follow Self-Esteem on Instagram, it's totally worth it for lots of that insight. It's great. There'll just be like a random, I'll be like, there'll be like a notes page that you're like, oh yeah, I thought that once. Yeah. And like, double tap.
Sometimes so bleak. And then sometimes, I've just found one the other day that I'd written and it just says in capital letters, I want Nocky.
Fine. And sometimes you do want Nocky.
I do. Sometimes that's what I need. So that or... Sometimes my producer will send me like a loop. He does a lot of film trailer stuff. So if they don't get used, he sends big dramatic loops of drums and stuff to me. And that was a springing off point. Sometimes I sit with a guitar like a normal musician would, but I'm pretty shit at guitar. I always have been. I've not got any better in 20 years of playing.
Do you play it live in the shows?
I do even, yeah. I played it live in all the Slow Club shows and never got any better or any more trustworthy that I will actually hit the thing. I also can't drive. I can't use Ableton. I am this like multi-faceted amazing artist that's so clever and everyone says it, but I'm like, but I can't drive a car.
But do not trust me behind a wheel.
Yeah, and if my barcodes are absolute dog shit. But yeah, I loads of different ways. I just started thinking about the third album. And,
yeah, because that must be...
Yeah, terrifying. You know they're like, difficult second album? Well, it's definitely going to be a difficult third album for me.
I mean, but that you only get a difficult second album or third album if you have an unbelievably successful one.
Yeah, making my peace with like, Prioritize Pleasure was its own beast and that's cool. And I want to make 20 albums, you know what I mean? So it's okay if the next one isn't...
But also, there's going to be an audience that are... Like, you know, people aren't finding you.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a baseline audience and that's exciting.
In the studio, I was like, oh, I could experiment more and I have the bravery now to do anything that's in my head because people are going to be there. Yeah. They might not like it, but they're going to be there, which has never been the case. All my songwriting has been like, I used to think there must be a formula to have a hit or something.
And yeah, right.
I used to think like all, you know, Ellie Goulding and Rita Ora and all these people I'd look at and be like, I wish that was me. They must have access to these songwriters who have this formula. And then I've been in with songwriters and been like, I don't know, I don't like it. They don't know anything much more than me. Probably know more guitar chords, but that's about it. And so, yeah, even that has been... creating without thinking like there's something I don't know is nice. So
yeah, that's like liberating.
Yeah, really liberating. And I just want to go big. I want to go like Olympic opening ceremony
epic
vibes. Throw those curtains wide.
Listen, I know that your audience will love it. I mean, I'll be there absolutely with your dancers and you on the drums.
I'm always like one step away from, you know, in The Lion King when he's holding that lion up.
Someone holding
rock.
You.
Yeah, like that's what music needs to feel like to me. It's just like a big open sky of everything's going to be fucking fine, love. That's what I want to make music like.
But I get that. God, I have a playlist. Do This All The Time is on it. When I'm going to a gig that like really gets me like, you know.
Oh,
and it's
that.
Like a whole range of like, there's like Call Me Owls on there. Like it's a range of like I Want to Dance With Somebody. There's some Queen on there.
Oh, brilliant.
It's really like... big
music,
but it's great because if I'm going to a gig and I don't quite feel like getting on stage, it does the thing.
Yeah, I am.
It makes me want to show off.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Like,
okay, I'll show off. Give me a microphone.
Like, you ever hear about the time?
Yeah, exactly. I had to listen to a song on the way to make me get on the stage tonight. You were saying before about like performing other people's songs where they were thinking about women, or do you feel now, like, is that something that you're really aware of? Like, when you're using, like, a gender in your songs, is it, like, when you're writing a song, is it specific to one person, or is it, like, loads of experiences that you've read about or thought about or been told by a friend?
That Components Pleases, I had to, like, do a lot of things and was repurposing feelings under the guise of other things, because I was so terrified of getting nasty, angry emails from people that didn't like what I was doing.
Compliments Please is Self-Esteem's first album, which is also very, very good.
But this time around, again, I'm just getting braver every time. And I'd had very specific, like, my major relationship had ended, and then I was like, I went back out with a lad that's horrible. Like, he's fine, but he's just an idiot. And like, that was a really useful summer of like, reminding myself what it's why I am who I am now and what not to be okay with. And but I make this joke in my shows, but it's like, it's not linear. Nothing is linear, and healing isn't. And I think I'm very, like, I'm obsessed with, like, learning how to feel better and love myself and accept bad feeling and good feeling, all the woo-woo shit that, like, you know, unfortunately there is something in it, even though it makes me feel quite icky to say. Live, laugh, love is like, but I'm like, no, something in it. But he, yeah, that, so, yeah, a lot of the, that prioritised pleasure is sort of that, and also my, I can't, like, my ex-partner, she's on every record, and I just went in to the studio last week and I was like, fuck's sake, I've just started writing a song about you again. It's like eternal. But they're like real loving ones, are all about her, and sad ones. And then, like, all my anger is at, like, treatment of me over the years. Mm-hmm. But then also, luckily, I just had this idiot boyfriend for a few months that really ignited that.
So, bad relationship, great music.
He's going to be getting a call soon, because I'm like, what are you doing this summer?
Because I've got an album to write, and listen, I'm four songs short, so do you want a weekend away?
I always say, there's a lyric on Compliments Please that says, so I'm going to get drunk and slag you off. And that was about this actor that I was getting off with. And then years later, I was talking like 4 years later, 3 years later, this song, Sexting You at the Mental Health Talk, it seems counterproductive. That's also about them, even though they're just dreadful. It's just like, what the cameo is. It's kind of fun, and, you know.
But I feel like those.
Well.
But I have.
But life, you know.
Yeah, yeah, I have relationships like that, like, I'll come back to in my head, and I'm like, and here's another thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I've grown a bit more. Here's another thing you did to piss me off.
Yeah, I love that, though. Again, I get so excited when I realise something that I was so bothered about X amount of years ago, that today I'm like, oh, I'm not bothered about that. It's beautiful.
Oh, it's
amazing.
So liberating. Yeah. Oh, my God. Totally. Or deciding you don't want to go to the party.
Yeah, I realised that the other day. What...
Like,
that's
you know,
what prioritised pleasure is
about. Of course, yeah.
They're always like, what does it mean? And I'm like, I know you want me to say dildos, but it's literally about not going to the party.
But just being like, I don't want to. Yeah. Oh, my God, I can say it. I don't want to. Like, it's so good.
It's a revelation.
It really is. I was at... I've got a little girl, and I was at soft play the other day, and this, like, 5-year-old walked past us with her mum and went, are we having fun now? And I thought, I've never related to anything more.
Oh, yeah.
Is this a good life? Are we having a good life? Is this a good life? I just don't know. Like, I think I am. Is
Surely
nice?
I am.
Yeah, this is
all
a nice
the things
life.
Are here that told me it would be.
Yeah.
But I don't feel fine. Anything.
Yeah. Am I sad? I don't know. It's so hard. Being a grown-up's tough.
That poor 5-year-old's got a lifetime ahead
of him. I'm like, oh, hon, I'm so sorry. This is it.
Am I having fun?
I've got one more question. We ask absolutely everybody who comes on the podcast. Now, we've got loads of listeners that listen across the globe, which is amazing, and people that are young, old, people that are allies, people that are newly out, people that have been out for 50 years. Someone emailed in the other day. And I always ask sort of, you know, it's sort of a... piece of advice for your younger self, and I guess I'm thinking about that version of Rebecca, maybe the version of you in Slow Club, maybe like traveling around and feeling like caged in, but not realizing that there was like a latch that you could get out of. If you could reach out to her, or maybe someone that's in, like, you know, maybe they're not a musician but in a similar situation somehow, if you could reach out to them and give them a few words of encouragement, what would you say?
Oh my goodness, I think the bar, you set your own bar, right? I don't know if that, I need to work on this a bit, but like, I was so addled by thinking I could be better or be more like something else, and then things will change for me. And everything changed when I just realized that I am whatever I'm giving is what I can give, and someone will want it somewhere.
Yeah,
it's like really badly put, but like, that's your power and your currency is exactly what you will create, certainly as a creative.
Yeah.
And when I stopped going, why not me all the time, and noticed, it was in the pandemic, I was like, I was painting and chilling and writing songs, and I was like, this is, you know, I am an artist full time. The world stopped, and the only thing it stopped me doing is doing that full time. And mm-hmm. yeah, I just realised, oh, I'm doing it. Like, that's the dream. That's the dream, and I'm living my dream. Not, my dream wasn't to be like on the Daily Mail or
yeah,
or
right,
like whatever. So, yeah, that's my advice. Is like, whatever you are is your, it's going to be the bar that you set, and you don't have to worry about getting over it, because you are the bar.
You are the bar, but also,
do you know what I mean?
I do. I think what you mean, you sort of said it in a roundabout way, is that like your thing is your superpower.
Yeah, like, and your currency, and what will get you there. So like, focusing on that and not what you're not is.
Yes. Oh, I felt so much like that in comedy. I think like I've had to be really blinkered, because I became, you know, there have been times like at the Edinburgh Festival when you walk past other people's posters and you think, oh my God, maybe I'm awful.
Yeah, the posters.
Or maybe I hate myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then all of a sudden you sort of fall into wanting someone else's dream.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, that was never my thing. No, but yeah. I was told it should be, because that's how you get to the next level.
Yeah.
But no, that's perfect advice, and I love it. And I've loved this conversation so much, and I love the album so much. Prioritize Pleasure is so good.
Oh,
and I mean, and you're on tour, but it's like basically sold out.
No, there is,
I'm coming to the Brighton
year.
Show
yeah.
next year, and
give
you're doing
look.
Hammersmith Apollo, and like, which is huge, and it's going to be amazing, and I just can't recommend Self-Esteem enough. So yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Get on it. But yeah, that's it.
Thank
brilliant.
You.
Thank you. That was so great.
Oh, you're amazing.
I love that
thank
so
you.
Much. That was the fantastic Self-Esteem, Rebecca Taylor. I just love her. If you haven't listened to the album, you've got to. It's called Prioritise Pleasure. And go and see her live. I've got tickets to go to see her at Brighton Dome next year. Can't wait. What a great conversation. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.